be with us. And it is our hope that through the next couple of days as we go through this seminar, that you get information that makes your relationships, no matter where you are in the relationship spectrum, that makes your relationships better. But before we jump into it, I want to make sure that everybody was able to pick up one of the cups on the way in. There's a table out there. You get a free. This is not just a coffee cup, although it may look like that. This is a Christ Unveiled coffee cup. So you're able to pick one of these up on the way out if you have not already gotten one on the way in. So relationships. God created relationships. They are His creation. He created the first relationship when He brought Eve to Adam. He made Eve from his rib, brought her to Him, and that established the first human relationship. He is the creator of relationships. And since He's the creator, He's able to define the parameters of relationships. He created it. He knows how they're supposed to work. He knows what's in bounds and what's out of bounds. And so His expectation really defines how well the relationship is going to go. So here's the general rule. We're going to say this over and over, at least I am, through my portions of this seminar, is God has a standard. He has an expectation of how relationships work, from friendship to dating to marriage. Even if you have to get divorced, God has a say-so in that. And even if you get remarried after divorce, God's got a say-so in that. Your relationship with your children, God has a say-so in that. And so here's the rule. To the extent that you deviate from God's expectation, is to that extent you degrade the relationship. Whether it's a friendship, dating, marriage, what have you. To the extent that you move away from God's standard, to that extent, you're corrupting that relationship. And sometimes it can just be something that the relationship is not all that it could be. It's still there, it's just not all that it could be. And many of us live like that. But sometimes you can deviate to such an extent that two people who used to love each other, look in each other's eyes and say, till death do us part, end up bitterly hating one another. It's not because there's something wrong with marriage. There was a deviation from God's standard that was not corrected. And so as we look at relationships, tonight I'll be talking about friendship and dating, and then we'll get into marriage during the second part of this session. But as we look at the dating, friendship dating, we first have to identify what is God's standard. If God has a standard, how do I know what that is? What is God's standard? And once we know what it is, we have to make sure, no matter what happens, don't deviate, because if you do, the relationship won't blow up the first second, the first moment that you deviate. The deviation will get worse and worse until you turn around and you realize this relationship is not what I wanted it to be. And so you're going to have a boomer up here with the cell phone with his notes on it. So we're going to see how that works out. So here's a couple of points that God expects. Number one, and these God's expectations totally different than our culture expects. We've deviated so far from what God expects, sometimes it's not recognizable. The first expectation God has for the Christian in a friendship or in a relationship is that both people are under the lordship of Jesus Christ. Now, that doesn't just mean in marriage. That means in dating. That means even in the friends that you have, you are not, as Christians, we're not to be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. And so if we deviate and say, hey, I'm going to date this person, I know that they don't, you know, they're not into God, but I think I can change them. You just deviated from God's standard. It's going to cause you problems. And see, now, it may not cause the problems, you know, the first month. It might not cause problems until the first child before marriage. But it's going to cause you problems. You won't get away with it because this is baked into creation. So the first standard then is that the two must be under the lordship of Jesus Christ. Here's another expectation that God has. Here's what we think culturally. We think this, that the young person grows up, 13, 14, you know, they probably still hate girls, hate boys. They don't want to be around each other. But then about 16, right in there, they start having an interest in the opposite sex. And then 17, 18, they want to go on a date. And there's some years there, that the dating years. I just want to date and see, you know, kind of see what's up. God's expectation for dating is that there is no reason to date other than looking for a life partner. Dating is not recreational. You can do it that way, but it'll hurt you in the long run. You want to make sure. We have children in the room, so I'm going to try to keep it family friendly. But you need to make sure your body count is not high when you meet the special one. Your body count really, according to God's standards, should be zero. Zero. We had a young lady that grew up in this ministry, beautiful young lady, facially beautiful, physically beautiful, mentally beautiful. But she was very chaste, and she would come to me any number of times through the years, and she would say, Pastor, in tears. She was like 17, 18. She was saying, I've never even had a boyfriend. I'm never going to have anyone. And I would tell her, just be patient, be patient. And she'd come back, you know, a year later, 2 years later, whatever it was, and she's crying again. No one. And I would tell her, just be patient. God's got somebody for you. And I think she was maybe 22, 23 when the right person came. And what a blessing to be able on their wedding night to present to him 23 years of integrity, of sexual integrity over the course of 23 years. That's God's standard. That's how it should be. And if we deviate from that, it doesn't mean we're out of the game. It just means that we've lowered our value. When we're young, you know, in our early, I don't know, maybe our late teens all the way to our early 30s, that is the time in your life you are the most high value as it regards dating, as it regards finding a life partner. You want to make sure you keep your value as high as you can keep your value, because that's what value you have on the dating market. And so if you find somebody and their body count is 23, well, that's like a used car that's been wrecked and the frame is twisted. You know, it's a car, but... So you need to make sure then that when you go into a romantic relationship dating, that you have that purpose in mind, that I'm looking for a life partner. I'm not looking, you know, for a pony ride. I'm looking for a life partner. And we've had at least a couple of marriages here at Christ Unveiled, one Christian finding another Christian. And the first thing that was said is that, listen, if this is not leading to marriage, I don't want to waste my time. Remember, you have that span of about 12 years that you have high value. Don't waste those years. Those are your best years. That's when you have the highest value. Make sure you use those years. And my rule of thumb would be this. This is just my rule of thumb. This is not the Bible. You want to date that person, that potential life partner, at least a year, because you need to see that person when they're happy with you. You need to see that person when they're not happy with you. You need to see how they react to different situations. When you're dating a person, you are actually interviewing that person for a lifelong position as your spouse. And you need to do due diligence and interview them. And again, for the Christian community, you should only be looking at people within the Christian community. You shouldn't be looking at the world, because that's going to be bad news. And so very often you'll find, especially guys will do this, yeah, I'm a Christian. Well, you need to interview him and see, is he really a Christian? several times. You need to ask him about the parable of the loaves and the fish. Or not the parable, but the story of the loaves and the fish. See what he knows. Ask him, hey, can we go visit your church this week? And introduce me to your pastor. And I'd like to meet some of your church friends. And either he has them or he doesn't. Or she. And that, you need to be looking for red flags. You can't just get so infatuated with the person that in such a rush to get them legitimately in the bed that you pass all of the important work you should do. Something that caught my attention is that we asked you to give us your questions, and we had categories: friendship, dating, marriage, divorce, remarriage, and people would ask their question in different categories. When we got the questions, I was somewhat surprised that in the divorce, remarriage, I don't know, we got maybe 10, 12 questions in that area. In marriage, we got like 20, 25 questions, a lot of them. In dating, we got one question. One. Now, what that tells me is that we think that we know how dating works, and it's not until we're married that we realize what's going on here. We got questions. And what I'm presenting to you tonight is in that dating area, when you're in that dating segment of relationship, you need to do due diligence and make sure you know who you're dealing with. Don't wait until you're married, emotionally, legally, and financially bound to that person. And so when you have those high value years, you need to make sure you check that person out for about a year. My wife will always say four seasons. You need to see him four seasons. But if after 2 years, marriage is not being openly discussed, don't waste your time. You need to bail. You only got 12 years of high value. Don't waste them on a dud. The next one that I have, and this is probably the biggest one, this is God's expectations for relationships, is maintain your sexual purity. And you may think, well, it's too late to tell me that now. Stop where you're at and maintain it from now on. Maintain it from now on. The scripture says, this is the will of God, that you abstain from fornication. And the idea here is that God gave sexual intimacy in the confines of marriage only. He gave it to the marriage union. But we're so corrupted, we took it outside of marriage, and what it does is it messes our whole chemistry up. The first time that you're intimate with somebody, your body, both of the people's body, releases chemicals, and those chemicals bind them to one another. You're chemically bound. But when your body count is, you know, high, well, you're all messed up chemically. And now when you actually find that person, you don't bond correctly to them because you've already kind of messed things up. You're chemically out of balance. But when you find two people that have stayed chaste and come together in marriage for the first time, they are bound together, and that will strengthen your relationship. Now, we are where we are. And so we can't undo anything, but from this point forward, we can move forward in integrity, and God will still bless you. He will still help you, and he will still bless you. So it's important then that we maintain our sexual integrity. In preparation for this, we did some interviews with some of the couples in the church that have, number one, have experience, and have been through some things. And one of the couples that we interviewed was Corey and Jackie Boyd. And we just asked them some questions, and they were very forthcoming and willing to share their victories and their defeats with us. And Corey Boyd gave an answer to one of the questions I asked. The question was, premarital sex, does it impact the way that you think? And I want you to take a look at this clip. Could we please play that first clip?
The conversation is leading to this. So then if people are not being faithful in their sexuality, does that cloud their minds so they can't make proper decisions regarding the length of dating, or whether marriage is on the table or not, do you think that clouds people's minds?
Yes.
Whenever you're engaging in any type of activity, of any type of like sexual activity, any type kissing, anything like that, it clouds it. Yep. Reason being is because, you know, we have chemicals in our body.
Yes,
those chemicals release certain things that make us happy, make us sad, whatever it is. And, you know, and if you're engaging in any type of sexual activity prior to being married, those chemicals are going to be released, and those are happy chemicals. You get in a happy state, and everything else outside of that gets blinded. And you start pushing forward through the relationship with this very skewed view of what the relationship is and how it's going to look in the future. And you stop asking all those questions. You stop digging into this person's background. You stop digging into, hey, what do you think about this? You know, like, I don't know, maybe some holiday that you celebrate or something like that. What are your thoughts on this? You stop asking all those questions.
Mm-hmm.
It eventually turns into, this person satisfies me in this way, mm-hmm. and I want that for the rest of my life, rather than really what it should be, which is, this person serves the same God I serve. This person is somebody that I can grow with, not only in a spiritual mindset, but in a life mindset. I can create a life with this person.
Wasn't that a good answer? And sometimes I think that we don't think about, your body is a chemical machine. Everything you do because your body releases chemicals to drive you. Your sex drive is chemical-based. Those are chemicals that are being released in your body. If you release those chemicals, if you abuse the release of those chemicals, you can become addicted to the chemicals that your own body releases. When you think of pornography and everything that comes with pornography, that addiction is based on the chemicals that are being released from the body, and you could become not only addicted to it, you can be drunk on it. You ever heard the song Drunk on Love? You can be drunk on the chemicals, your own body. And when that happens, just like someone is drunk on alcohol, your decisions are not made well. And although Corey and Jackie together, they have landed firmly on their feet, and I'm so happy for them. But I watched Corey go through a living hell, and he was kind enough to share with us so that maybe some of us don't have to go through the same hard knocks that he went through to learn. That was the voice of experience. Now, so what happened? What if you just practice premarital sex? What happens? Well, first of all, sooner or later, you're going to get pregnant. Sooner or later, there's going to be a pregnancy. And most of the time, many of the times, I'll put it this way, the pregnancy occurs and the man says, see ya. And the poor sister's there with a single mother trying to raise a baby by herself. And here's what happens. Could we put up that next graph, please? This is a graph from the Heritage Foundation. And it was taken in 2006-2008 time period from the census. And it shows that a two-parent household, about 6%, 6.4% of two-parent households live at or below the poverty line. However, single parents, single female-headed households, a single mother raising her baby, 36.5% of that demographic live at the poverty level. Is that making sense to you? That means when you have that baby out of wedlock, there is a strong chance you're not going to hit the heights financially in well-being that you could have hit because you have responsibilities. And so there's a very real cost that you're going to have to pay. And I didn't bring this clip, but I was talking with one of the sisters. We did an interview with her, and she was, when I asked about this, she became very stern. And she said, when you have a baby outside of wedlock, you don't get away. She said, there's a price to pay. You don't get away with that. And so, of course, we all are where we are. We're not beating anybody up. That's not what we're doing. But if you've made some mistakes, stop making them. If you haven't made any mistakes, you don't have to, but you're going to have to manage practicing holding your boundaries. You're going to have to keep your boundaries. You're not going to be able to let people walk inside of your boundaries, because we're all adults here and people want what they want at all costs. And once you get drunk on chemicals, no telling what's going to happen. And we look at our society and we see that we have so many single parent households, and it causes a problem. And I'm going to share this, and Corey said this when we were doing the interview. From Corey's previous marriage, he has 5 children, 2 twins and 3 children. And he was very candid before he met Jackie, his new and current wife. His thoughts were, who's going to want me? I'm almost a middle-aged guy with 5 children. Who's going to want me? But God blessed him and blessed him greatly with the perfect person to step into that situation. But that is a very valid question, because you have to look at it in the dating realm from market value. What is your market value? Let's just say there's a Christian man. He's fine. He's fine. He owns his own house. He's paid off his own car. He has a good job making good money. He's educated. He's eloquent. What type of a spouse do you think he's looking for? He's active in church. He's active in the ministry. The perfect Christian man, who do you think he's looking for? He's looking for a high-value woman who has learned. The scripture says, he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing. He's not looking for someone who's going to one day be a wife. He's looking for somebody who already has the mentality, the discipline, the maturity to be a wife. And so it's important then that we maintain our sexual purity, so that we don't end up in the segment of the demographic that is forced to live at the poverty line just because circumstance demands that due to the mistakes that we made. When we make mistakes, God will forgive you, but man won't. God will forgive you. He'll help you. If you come to him, he'll help you. But man and this world system will not forgive you, and there is a price to pay. So in getting ready for this, again, we asked for questions. People, give us all of your questions. And I got one friendship question and one dating question. So in my conversations that I've had with different people, I would hear their questions, and I started writing down my own questions, because I'm sure you want to know these questions, but you are going to wait until after you're married to ask them. And so we're going to ask them early in hopes that we don't fumble. So the first question is a friendship question. The person said, I struggle to make friends at school. What advice would you give me? Here's my advice. Making friends is the responsibility of the person who needs the friend. You cannot blame society. You cannot blame the community because you don't have friends. Of the 4 million people that's in Dallas, if not any of them will be your friend, that's indicative of the fact you're doing something that's pushing people away. You're repelling people in some way. And one of the things that I've noticed, that if you are engaged in the culture teaches you how to be toxic. It teaches you an attitude that's toxic. It teaches you how to be hard. It teaches you how to be self-centered. And if you want to have friends, here's the first thing to do. Learn how to smile at people. Be approachable. Just smile at people. I mean, you don't have to be just like a giggling fool, but But, you know, be smile. Be don't be hard. Be soft. And be approachable, and people will approach you. Here's another thing, and this is mainly for young people, but I think all of us to some extent are impacted by this. Get off your phone. When you're like this, nobody's going to approach you because you're busy. And we spend so much time looking at our glass that sometimes the world is passing us by while we're right here. I have seen marriages fail because of social platforms. The person's so engaged and so addicted to social platforms, the whole marriage collapses to the point of divorce. I don't mean they're not getting along. I mean, I hate you now. And give me the papers, and we're going to sign this thing and end it. And so, number one, smile at people. Be approachable. Number two, get off your your phone. And number three, this is so attractive both for males and females. Learn to have a face-to-face conversation with another person, with a potential romantic interest. Because to be able to engage with someone intellectually and talk about current events or talk about things that are happening and hold that conversation, that's very attractive, and it makes you unique because, especially in the lower, after boomers, since the mobile phone came out, our skills in having conversations have decreased dramatically. And sometimes just sit down and just learn to have a face-to-face conversation. That makes you unique. That makes your market value go up. Because you're not just presenting your sexual self, you're presenting your intellectual self. Because please believe me, whoever, be it male or female, and you have an interest that you're talking to, they've already checked out you out sexually. They know how you look, they know how you built, they've already checked that out. But what they haven't checked out is how you think, how you feel, how you articulate. And those qualities alone can, you don't have to be a model. You don't have to be absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. You can just be able to present ideas, and that's attractive to another person. And I'm going to throw this one in. It's not in my notes, but I think it's necessary. And this is mainly for the sisters. Please, God, I hope it's not for the brothers. You know, almost all women now wear false hair, false eyelashes, false face. Everything is unreal. One of the things I love about my wife, I absolutely adore about her, is that when I look at her, I see her. I don't see store-bought products. I see her. I don't mean when she wakes up in the morning. I mean all the time. I see her just like she sees me. And if you would discipline yourself in that area, that makes you unique. It makes you unlike those who are involved in the culture. You're unique. And so that I think that's important as well. So if you're struggling to make friends, check yourself out. See what are you doing that's repelling people or causing people to not be interested in being your friend. So the next question that I have is, what does the Bible say regarding women using birth control to prevent pregnancy? That's a good question, isn't it? So I broke the answer down into two different segments. If we're talking about birth control outside of pregnancy, the Bible says nothing. Birth control outside of marriage. Thank you, Pastor. The Bible says nothing about that because the Bible doesn't tell you how to sin. And sex outside of marriage, that's sin. That's fornication. So it says nothing. If we're talking about within the confines of marriage, the Bible also says nothing about that. And the reason is that there was no birth control in the days that the Bible was written. And we have to understand, the Bible is not a rule book. The Bible is a book that we might learn his heart so that we learn who he is and we understand what he likes and dislikes. And so I can't give you what does the Bible say. It says nothing about birth control. But I can give you my own wisdom, and this is just coming from me. It is not wisdom. If you use no birth control at all, a married couple, it is not wisdom to have a baby every year during your baby-bearing years, because you would have about 12, 15, 16 of them in today's economy. That's difficult. And so I would say that use your wisdom to make sure that your number of children do not exceed your paycheck. And again, there is no direction that we have in the Bible. Yes, it's okay. Now, but there is this. Abortion is not birth control. Abortion is murder. So you have to, whatever you do, it needs to happen before conception. Because at conception, you're going to have that baby, or you're going to violate God's law. Thou shalt do no murder. So I would say for married couples, that you want to make sure that you, if you use no birth control, ever how you do this, don't have a baby every year, because you can't do that too many years, and you're going to be sexually active, able, if you start, say, at 20, you know, you probably got 12, 15 years that you can have babies, maybe a little bit longer, and you can't afford that many children. Does that make sense? Okay, and now that's not Bible. That's just coming from me, because that's all that we have. The Bible doesn't speak to that. So the next question I have is, how does one contend with a limited dating pool and lack of potential partners? That's a good one, isn't it? I think that maybe it's a misnomer. And the reason I say that is that we look at perhaps, I don't know, 20 years ago, before all the men became feminized and all the women became toxic, before that, we look at that landscape and we say, wow, all these guys out here, and there are some cute ones. All these women out here, man, and there are some nice ones. For the Christian, that's not the options for you as a Christian. As a Christian, you cannot be unequally yoked together with an unbeliever. That means your options have always been only within the Christian community. Now, that doesn't mean only in the church that you attend. It means in the Christian community. We have a married couple right here. Now, they did know each other back in high school, and they went, you know, they had their separate lives. Each of them, I think, was in long-term relationships with other people. One of them was married. And while they were, after their divorce and after they were single again, they had a relationship on the telephone. They're living in two different states. And that relationship was, I think if I remember correctly, over a year that they just talked on the phone to get to know one another. And then finally, you know, they met up and they began to date. And while they were dating, the female, because she had already made some mistakes, she had already wasted a lot of time on a dud, and she wanted to make sure that this was not another dud, the first thing she did, she actually ran a credit check on this brother. A credit check. I like that. Because you can know who somebody is by looking at what kind of bills have they made. And so here's the point that I want to make, though. It is during dating that you do all of that due diligence. You need to know. Don't get so excited and so overwhelmed and in love with this person that you don't check them out, because the human being is the most deceptive animal on the planet. We can be very deceptive. And when somebody's going for the gold, they can say whatever has to be said to meet their ends. And we have to be very careful that we know who we're dealing with. So it's during the dating period, that 1 to 2 years that you're looking at each other as potential life partners, that you're doing all of those types of inquiries. And as Corey said in the video, don't get intoxicated with the chemicals that come with sexual intimacy and stop doing the due diligence. Here's something else. As soon as that person moves from the friend zone into the potential zone, immediately you need to let them know, listen, if this is not ending in marriage, I have no interest in this. You don't have to wait a year down the road or 2 years down the road or 10 years down the road when all of your high-value days are now wasted on this person and it was never going to marry you from the beginning. They're not even interested in it. So you need to make sure that's on the table right up front. Listen, I'm not looking for a good time. I'm looking for a husband or I'm looking for a wife. And if you're not looking for that, then let's stay in the friend zone and don't waste my time. Does that make sense? Okay. The limited dating pool. So when you look at all the men or all the women in society, those were never on the table for you. Your dating pool was always just in the Christian community. That was it. Now, when you're in a smaller church, this can be difficult because you don't have as many potential candidates. But you have to understand, for the brothers, there's no beautiful princess that got changed into a frog waiting for you to kiss them and it all turns good. And for the sisters, there's no man riding around with a glass slipper that fits your foot. That's not how it works. You're not going to find the perfect person because that person doesn't exist. You're going to find someone that I can make a life with, someone that we can build something together. If you're looking for the exact, here are my specifications. And he's got to make $750,000 a year. And we do all of this nonsense in our minds. And what you've done is take the limited Christian pool that exists and make it even smaller with that kind of nonsense. And someone says, well, I want them to look like a model. Well, you don't look like a model. You have to be reasonable. You just have to be reasonable. And sometimes the most beautiful looking people are the biggest problem. Trust me on that. Because they got too many options. Of course, if they're beautiful, they can't help it. that's just the way they look. So something else that you can do is if you're contending with a limited dating pool, is you can be preparing yourself. If you're a young man, you can make sure that you've got a good job. You got some money in the bank. You own your car. You're not making $900 payments. You own your car. You've bought it. That you're ready. You've shown I'm already ready. If you can buy a house, you've already bought a house. You're ready to make a family. And when a young woman sees that and sees that, yeah, this brother is solid. Because, you know, what you're dealing with is men that have been feminized in much of society. So you're going to stand out. Yeah, I got a house and a car. And I got a job. And I got some money in the bank. That makes you high value. And if you're a young woman, you could, here's the biggest thing, learn how to cook. It doesn't mean you have to stay home and cook. It just means that you can cook. Because a lot of men can't. You know, men are different. I personally can just eat anything. I'm cool, just a cold hot dog. I'm good. But with my wife now, she can throw down, and I appreciate that. And so there are things that we can do while we're in that time of dating, even though we haven't found a potential partner, things we can do to prepare ourselves so that we raise our value. Because let's just be honest, there's competition. There's competition. If that man's got a house and a car and money in the bank and he looks good and he's got a good job and he's solid, he's probably got a lot of offers. Yeah, he's probably got a lot of people shooting at him. And so you have to make sure you have value as a young lady, and vice versa. If that lady, she's solid, she is intellectual, her rear end is not all over Instagram. She's not out there twerking on the internet. She carries herself with dignity. She carries herself like a mature woman. That raises that value. And generally what happens is high-value people look for high-value people. And mid-value people look for mid-value people. And some of us just take whatever we can get. So again, when you're dating, there's only one purpose for dating, and that is to find a life partner, someone that you can build a life with. And while you're in that dating area, you want to be looking for those red flags, and we'll talk about that in just a moment, because sometimes you can be all in, but then when you start recording the red flags, you can say, oh, I cannot deal with that. Well, that's the time to figure out. You don't want to wait till you get married, legally, financially, emotionally bound, to realize, I can't deal with that. Well, how did you miss that when you were dating? You want to be looking at that, save yourself some heartache, and save some of those high-value years to be more productive. So the next question that I have here then is, how does one deal with the woman making more money and her submission? And I would imagine that we got this question from a guy. I can't imagine a woman asking, how do I deal with submission? So this is probably a guy's question. And it's a good one. In the realm, we're talking tonight about dating and friendship. While you are friends and while you are dating, she owes you zero submission. Zero. Wherever you find the term submission in the New Testament, it says, wives, submit yourself to your own husband. If you hadn't put a ring on it, you don't deserve any submission at all. So you're looking for something that's not legit, because remember, you're dating, she's marking down your red flags. You're about to get eliminated. And so submission is not something that you can expect in dating. Now, with that being said, you can look for traces. You can look for tendencies. You can tell whether she is completely rejecting the idea of submission, or if it's just not time for her to submit yet. Are you with me? And you can see that in little bitty ways. I don't want to be too specific, but say you walk into a room like this. Did she lead you to your seat, or did you lead her? Okay. You can see in little bitty ways, and when you're dating, you need to be looking for this. When you say right and she says left, how does that reconcile? How do you figure out what to really do? It doesn't mean that she owes you submission, but if you're moving towards marriage, you'll see traces. I think this is a person that would potentially not have a problem with submission. And so the other part of the question then was, how do you deal with the female, the woman? They told me I shouldn't use the term female. It's now offensive with the Gen Z. So, I'm a boomer, so I didn't mean to offend you if I did. How do you deal with the woman when she makes more money than the guy? And here's my answer in the form of a question. Why does how much money you make matter? If the twain are about to become one flesh, if you're looking towards being one unit before the Lord, what is the issue with who makes the most money? Because please believe me, it's very temporary. When Sister Lincoln and I, when we got remarried, I made way, way more money than her, quite a bit more money. But then when I left corporate America and I came to the ministry, Sister Lincoln made way more money than I made. And then Sister Lincoln retired, and I'm still working, and now I make way more money than she does. It's not a contest. And so we have the bulk of our money, any money that we have, any resources we have, houses, cars, whatever, it's in both of our names. She has full access to every account. And that's the way we've always done it, because we understand we are one. Now, I generally pay the bills only because I'm very organized. Used to be, as I get older, it's more challenging, but very organized, and so I pay the bills. And if my wife, she's going to spend $100 or something, just don't even tell me. Just, you know, let me know so I can make my books in order. But if we're going to, she's going to spend like $1,000 or $5,000 or go on a cruise or do something like that, she always calls and says, hey, I'm thinking in May I want to go on this cruise. And I'm like, oh, baby, you know, because I save a lot of money. I'm a good saver. So I don't like to spend it once I saved it. But she has worked all of her life. Her and I together have built our lives. And if you give me enough time and you want to go on a cruise, we're going to send you on a cruise. And that's how that works. And so who makes the most money, we don't look at that, because we're not in competition with one another. Everything I have belongs to her. And everything she has belongs to me. And we are disciplined in the way that we manage it. If you are battling over who makes the most money, or this is my money, or this is my money, and you're in the dating realm, that's an indication you're not ready. You're not ready because you're still two very different people. You're not coming together. Of course, before you get married, you don't need joint bank accounts before you get married. That's going to be a problem. But I think one of the questions that we had regarding this, budgeting for a date. What should you budget for a date? And the number I have here is $300 or $400. Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said. You budget when you buy a car. You budget when you buy a house. You don't budget for a date. If you have to spend $300 to take one another out, you are not financially responsible. That sounds funny, but you're not. You could save that $400. If it's $400 a date, don't go to 10 dates. Save all that money, and you can go on a cruise to the Bahamas and get the captain's suite. But if you pilfer away your money on little know-nothing stuff, it means you're not financially responsible or mature. Instead of spending $400, you can go home and fry some bologna and make goo-goo eyes at each other and have popcorn and bologna. And you wake up the next day, you still got your money. And so you should not have to try to impress a person with how much money you spend on a date, because it's a red flag. For me, it would be a red flag. You know, if a sister took me out, if that ever happened, and spent $400 taking me out, I'm like, well, that's silliness. I wouldn't take myself out for $400. And so all of those little things that you see like that, those are indications. You look at those things and is that maturity? Is that maturity? And if it's not maturity, it's a red flag. It doesn't mean you can't deal with it. It doesn't mean it knocks that person out of contention, but it means I caught this and I need to consider this along with everything else that I caught. Okay. So the next question I have is, how or should I date someone who needs to change in a couple of areas? And I have seen this so many times. You know, someone in the church marries someone who is not a Christian and say, yeah, but they promise they're going to come to church with me and it's all going to be good. And it never turns out good. If that person is not who you want him to be or who you want her to be while you're dating, you are not going to be able to change them. And here's why. Here's why. Let's just say you have a couple. And let's just say that he wants her to change just a little bit, not a lot, in a specific area. He wants her to change from A to B in an area. And she says, I agree. I want to change from A to B also. She has no power to change herself. Have you ever tried to stop a habit? It takes God to help you, especially if that thing is part of your personality. And so no amount of nagging or complaining or anything of that nature is going to change that person. My own personal experience is Sister Lincoln is somewhat adventurous. I'm a homebody. She's adventurous. She likes to travel. And when she was working, she would go on these business trips. And then, you know, then she'd go on a cruise with one of my sisters and come back. And then there's another business trip. And I'm like, whoa, baby, wait a minute. I didn't marry you for you to be somewhere else. I wanted you to be with me. And I was a little babyish about it. When I first started noticing back in the day, I was like, I don't like this. I want you to be home with me. And the Lord had to help me to see that she is who she is. She worked a full career. She made her own money. And she wants to go on a trip. She went to the South Pole one time. To the South Pole, there's nothing even there. But that's what makes her happy. And I realize I need to stop fighting. I can't change her. I can't change her likes or her dislikes. I need to let her be who she is, and I need to embrace her for who she is, not for who I wanted her to be. And so you need to make sure in the dating, going through the spectrum of dating, you need to make sure that when you see things like that, can I deal with this or can I not? So let's say that we had a female that's had OCD, just extremely organized. I mean, when you look at the spice cabinet, they're all alphabetical with the labels sticking straight out. Perfect. And then She goes by his house one day and notices he left hair in the sink when he shaved his beard, when he clipped his beard. And that's not consistent with OCD. The question is, can I deal with this for the rest of my life? It doesn't mean it's a no-go, but you need to make that decision. I can or I cannot deal with this for the rest of my life, because you can't change that person. Now, they may mature and they may, you know, sometimes our personalities over time rub off on each other, but you have to make that decision. I think I can deal with this for the rest of my life or not. But if you have a decision like that, and this person releases your chemicals in your body, you can't make that judgment call because you're drunk. You with me? You have to make sure you keep a clear mind that, okay, I can deal with this, or no, I cannot deal with this. And as soon as you find the red flag you cannot deal with, you need to put that person back in the friend zone and you need to move on. Don't waste your high value years. There's still value after 32. But it's not the same. It's not the same. There's still value after 42 and 52. But it's not the same. Those are not the highest value years that we have in terms of dating. Okay, let's move on. I'm running out of time here. What are some red flags that you might look for? You need to have, if you're going into a dating relationship, you need to have some red flags that you're looking for before you see them. So that when you see them, you know, I was looking for that red flag. That's going to be an issue. But some of the red flags that we can look for is the way that person reacts when they're not happy, when they're angry, when things are not going well. Do they become a whole different person? I mean, do they become like satanic or something? How do they act when they're not happy. Maybe it's a red flag. Maybe they just get, you know, a little annoyed. But you need to look at that and you need to determine, can I deal with that? Or does the person take a swing at you? You need to determine, can I deal with that? Something else, do they have children from a previous marriage? Hybrid families are not always easy. They're not always easy. And it takes maturity for the parents of hybrid families to organize that and to make it work. And it can work, and God will bless you if you submit to Him. But it's something that you want to be looking at and you want to be aware of. Maybe it's a red flag that knocks that person out of contention. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a red flag that you, maybe it's a white flag. And you're like, that's exactly what I was looking for. Does that person have child support payments? Because that's going to impact finances for the next 18 years or for a number of years until that child is 18 years old. Can you deal with that? Most marriages, young marriages that dissolve because of money problems. And so that's another consideration. Here's another one. Does that person require expensive dates and gifts? I mean, if you just, you know, drove past Mickey D's or somewhere and picked up something, are you hearing a lot of noise about that? And here's the thing, is that person willing to foolishly spend your money? Because it means, number one, they don't care about you and your money, or they have no financial responsibility. And so you need to look at, as a matter of fact, just one day, because you need to check it out, say, hey, I thought I'd just slide by and just, you know, maybe we'll just go by Mickey D's and pick up a couple burgers. Get the reaction. Just to see the reaction. Just to see the attitude. What's going on there? Because you need to know that person. Because you're not going to spend your whole life as a married person doing $400 dates. I can guarantee that ain't going to happen. And here's a really good one. Are they willing to spend your money but not spend their own money? Are they willing to splurge at your expense, but never splurge at their own expense? And what you're looking for is you need to know that person, not what they're presenting to you. You need to look behind the curtain and see who you're really dealing with. And when you make sure that the candidate that you have is a true Christian, Not someone who says you've already went to go meet their pastor, go meet their Christian friends, you know they're a real Christian, the chances of them having some of these toxic traits are going to be much less. But if you find someone that says, I'm a Christian, but the pastor greets them like a guest, like someone they've never seen before, meaning they don't go to church that often. They just name the church, but they don't go there. And the Christian friends, they have no Christian friends. That means they said they're a Christian, but they're really not a Christian because they're going for the gold. Does that make sense? So dating is a responsibility. If you don't do the due diligence during the time of dating, you're going to have a lot of questions when you get to marriage. If you don't make sure the person that you're that is the potential partner has the degree of maturity, both maturity as a person and Christian maturity, and you yoke yourself together with them, you are potentially going to have problems. And so dating is an interview. It's a time that we do interviews. It's a time that we ask the hard questions. It's a time that we do the probing. You can easily get that person's driver's license number, social security. You can do a whole background check on the internet. Did they kill somebody? What kind of criminal record do they have? You need to know who you're dealing with. Because what if you looked it up and, yeah, there's a criminal record. It's assault. It's domestic assault. Meaning he punches his girlfriend out, or she punches her boyfriend out. whichever way. You need to do all of that diligence. You don't need to wait until you're legally bound to that person and then found out, man, he's been slapping people around all his life. And now here I am married to this fool. You want to make sure you've checked that out while you're dating. That's what dating is. Dating is not to see how close you can come to intercourse without doing it. Dating is that you can check out who that person is, how they think, how they operate, and do you want to commit yourself to this person? Once you say I do, it's a lifelong relationship. You can't just jump out of it. It's not just over. And so I've run out of time. It's exactly 8:00. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to move into the realm of marriages. If you have questions concerning dating, you can use the contact form on the internet. You can send them to me. I'll try to give you the very best answer that I can. But we're really limited on time, so when we come back from the 10-minute break, we're going to jump right into marriages. So go ahead and take a break.